This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, heretofore, forever, henceforth, now and forever referred to as the new host of NFL Live. Laura, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Well, we're trying to envision the split screen of Cam Newton and one of his post-game outfits and Bill Belichick and his cutoff hoodie and just how that will look together.
Did you guys see the little image that was floating around on the internet the day that we found out that Cam Newton would become a Patriot that had Bill Belichick in the cutoff hoodie, but then had him with a hairstyle that was I think Adam Schefter posted it from somebody else, and I was actually sitting there laughing like I don't know what.
That's why the internet will always be undefeated.
Yeah,
the internet will be. Rex Chapman's line, Rex, I'm stealing it from you right now. I'm just telling you, the internet remains undefeated.
Possibilities are endless.
Yes, they are. But possibilities for you are bound. So again, congratulations, newest host of NFL Live. How are you feeling about that?
I'm really excited. And as you guys know, massive shoes to fill, and just thankful for all the kind words from you guys and from everybody. And it's time to get to work. And we've got major expectations for this show. And like you guys know, continuing on a really strong legacy. So I'm excited. I'm humbled and just really, really glad that there's a light at the end of the tunnel here of talking about football and bringing football back.
Is there though? I mean, man, Laura, it's getting a little crazy out there right now. I know we keep talking about this long runway for football as baseball players report today, the NBA players start to get to their cities before they go to Orlando July 28th for the NFL, but boy, the waters seem to be getting a little murky, don't they?
They do. Look, guys, I think we need to sort of weather the storm of just accepting that we're going to see a lot of positive cases come out for coronavirus over the next few weeks. You know, it's just that that's going to be the case. And we can sit here and talk about all day long about why that's happened. But either way, that's what we're going to see. And I was talking to somebody yesterday who's a very prominent coach in college football. And he had recently talked to some of his connections in the NFL. The basic thought was, look, we know, you know, how to contain this in our facilities. What we're having a hard time with is that we're dealing with people, young people, and then sometimes not just young people who want to go out and have fun and see each other and gather together again. And that's where things have gotten a little bit out of control. And that's really just talking about college football. The NFL has certainly seen some positive cases, but they're obviously not gathered together like some of these other leagues. I think, to me, what will really be interesting is how everything works with baseball and the NBA, because those are more bubble-like environments, especially the NBA. And we know that the NFL has said they're really not planning on doing that. So do we see 100% success rate with what happens in those two leagues? And maybe that influences the way that you see some of this go down. But I mean, how does the NFL perpetuate a bubble environment? There's so many people involved. These teams, you can't, right? So that's where I do think that, you know, the acceptance of, look, we're going to have some positive test cases. How do we then limit the spread? How do we manage and keep everyone as safe as possible?
Well, as I said yesterday, I was talking to one current NFL player, and he texted me, hey, we're going to start on time, and then all hell breaks loose when we get together. So, I mean, there's no way to do it. There's no way to play the sport without doing all the things you're supposed to not be doing in a pandemic.
Right.
So, I mean, this is the great experiment. I mean, everyone else, I mean, you could literally probably play an entire baseball game and – honestly, if you wanted to avoid touching another human being, it's possible. Can't do that in the NBA. Can't do it in the NFL. You're not going to do it in college. Speaking of college, Mike, you brought up an interesting situation with what's going on in
Arizona. Yeah, this has been interesting, Laura, and it is time for some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. This is Straight Talk. I mean, we see some of the spikes that are going on, like in Florida and Texas and in Arizona. And the university in Arizona, we know they've shut down gyms again and bars again. And the University of Arizona's president said that the campus wouldn't reopen under the current conditions, so they wouldn't be bringing people on. And then there was a tweet from Malik Hausman, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who plays on Arizona's football team. And his tweet simply was, So why are me and my team still on campus? So I guess that's the next thing they're talking about. They have athletes on campuses already, Laura. And you wonder, should they send them home back out to places across the country, or are they actually safer just to stay on campus in kind of a bubble atmosphere? I don't honestly know the answer to that, but that's what they're trying to figure out at some colleges right now.
Remember when Lincoln Riley was taking a lot of flack for saying, hey, guys, we might need to push this back as far as possible for when players should report to campus? Well, he ended up at Oklahoma. They decided on that July 1st report date. He, I think, looks pretty smart now, because we're talking about voluntary workouts here, basically, for these players. I mean, it's very that's just right now. This is what they're doing. I mean, it's not anything serious. It's not anything organized. And they're able to really manage it. But still, gathering the players together and in conjunction with these spikes, it's allowed for a lot of chaos on these college campuses. I mean, you mentioned Arizona. How about Clemson, where basically a third of the team apparently has tested positive for coronavirus? And even, I think, you know, there's a lot of information. This is not hard to figure out, that there are probably more positive cases at most of these schools than we're even hearing about. So now they really are in a rock and hard place type situation. And I can tell you this, from what I've heard, a lot of these, you know, states where the numbers are spiking and all of that, they don't want to send their players back across various parts of the country, not only just because they could potentially be carriers of the virus or spread it, but it's also that they don't know if they're even going to be that much safer there. It's a little more controlled in these environments on campus. But I do think what we've continued to see during this time, and this has been because of a variety of reasons, but the athlete voice is stronger than ever at the collegiate level. And I think that's where you're going to continue to see. I mean, some of these players are going to say, well, wait a second, I don't know if I want to be here. And once again, and this is something I was just talking to my friend Paul Feinbaum about, the parents are starting to get more and more nervous. And that's another key piece in all this, too, if you're talking about just the college level.
Well, listen, as Laura Rutledge is with us, I've been saying that all along. The one thing you can control in the NFL is you have a union that works for you and says these are the parameters under which we're willing to do this. In college, you have none of that, and then you have the parents who are ultimately, in many cases, going to decide whether or not they want their child to be exposed to this. But the interesting thing is, Laura, as much as like that Arizona player is like, what are we here? You could make a very compelling argument. They actually are safer there, where there are more restrictions and there's more sort of parameters and where they're going to go and not go, as opposed to being out on the roam where the possibilities are limitless.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, because I've had a lot of people wonder what would healthcare be like if a player was back at home or somewhere outside of campus and they got sick, and whether it was coronavirus or something else. And by my understanding, for most universities, they are still covered under the same healthcare. So they would still have those benefits at their disposal, which, you know, adds at least a piece of information to this thought process and how you would look at it. But I do think that it's fair to say, as far as just having everything at their fingertips, having doctors, I mean, most of these schools have entire medical committees that are assigned to be tracking all of this every day, testing and also just checking in on these guys. And then if somebody contracts the virus, taking care of them, all of that. And it's not to say that, you know, a player could maybe be in a better situation being at home. I'm sure they could, but it's mainly that I think overall you can brush a broader brushstroke on this if they're at a campus and they are under that particular control and care.
Talking to Laura Rutledge, a new host of NFL Live, but certainly was doing things for the SEC network here at ESPN as well. So a lot of ties to college. And the thought, Laura, the Ivy League has already said they have two scenarios, both seven-game schedules, one starting at the end of September or the other being in spring. With your people that you know in college football, the thought, it doesn't seem to be spring as much, but maybe with this new outbreak, do they think of pushing the season a little bit at this point, or is it still we plan to start on time no matter what?
It's kind of like some of these other leagues, and I think the NFL's in this category too. Of they've got so many scenarios, it's probably, and contingency plans, it's probably hard to keep track of which one is which at this point. I would say even in the SEC, and Greg Sankey has been on record saying this, he might have said this to you guys, they've got 15 to 20 contingency plans just right now that they're operating with. I think spring is still a kind of worst case scenario, but still could get the season in type deal, and a lot of that has to do with some of the fiscal responsibilities. So it's out there. It could maybe happen. But I think the more likely thing would be, if we see the season push back, would be to see it push back, but sometimes still in the fall. The hesitancy there is that they're trying to get in as many games as possible. So do they push it back and then there's an additional outbreak or something like that? And that's where I think, you know, at some point you're going to see some of these leagues just say, all right, let's just, as long as we think we can be as healthy and as safe as possible, let's just go ahead and try this and see what happens, which is, I mean, I hate to sound flippant, but that's just the way that they're looking at it, you know, and I think that's a real possibility. But, you know, the other thing about all this is that I think there have been some people who have been trying to wait out for and hold out for a vaccine and say, maybe we could get to that point and then you could have college football season. And that's something that hasn't been really publicly said as much, but I hear that in a lot of people that I talk to behind the scenes. And I think that is starting to dissipate, that thought process of just let's wait and see if there's a vaccine. No one can guarantee any of that. No one knows what that would look like. And no one knows how long that might just drag all of this out to the point where they say we just can't even get a season in. And that's what they're trying to avoid, is somehow, how can you get a season in? I don't see right now, though, the Power Five conferences and even the Group of Five pushing to spring.
Yeah, listen, some schools like Morehouse have already said we're not even going to try this year and we'll pick it up again in 2021 because of the cost. So we'll see what happens going forward. Laura Rutledge, the new host of NFL Live. And Laura, we'll leave you with this. Every night before the first round of the draft, Chris Berman sends me a text and it simply says, don't bleep it up.
Will not.
There you go.
There it is. So I'm just passing along the words of encouragement and wisdom that Boomer gives to me.
It's so great. And I am so thankful for your words of encouragement and wisdom. And I promise you, I'm going to do everything in my power to not bleep anything up.
There you go. It'll be great. And I'll be watching. Thanks, Laura.
Bleeping. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Laura.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
Inside the Bubble. And that's where we find our intrepid ESPN NBA reporter, Malika Andrews. Malika, can you confirm you are inside the bubble?
I am technically going, quote unquote, into the bubble tomorrow. So how this works is right now I am in Orlando. I am near feet, okay, well, maybe more like a mile from where the actual bubble campus is, in a hotel where all of the NBA staff that are arriving early to prepare for Orlando, I'm talking about the folks involved in making sure the gym is wired correctly, the public relations folks, some of the league office folks that are overseeing things to make sure the players' arrivals go smoothly. All of those folks, myself and one producer, are in this hotel being quarantined and getting tested every day up until we move into the bubble in that lovely voice that just happened tomorrow.
All right, so just so I'm clear, the hotel you're in today is going to be a different hotel from the one you're in tomorrow?
Correct, because this is a hotel for the quarantine and testing for several days. So I will have been tested and quarantined for 4 days before heading into the bubble, so you say.
I can't think of it. I been at the company a long time that anybody was going to be in one spot for this long. Do you know, I mean, how
you
many
might be setting a record.
How many days you are going to be there?
Well, when they showed me the paperwork that said check out, potentially it's a mid-October date, my eyes bugged a little bit. I was like, oh, I don't know how to pack for this type of thing.
Yeah, bring a U-Haul is what you do. Yeah,
think of the, exactly. Hey, Malika, think of the per diem.
Think
of the per diem you're getting, though,
that, huh? Yeah, that's just a veteran move on your part. That is so smart.
Being an optimist versus me looking at the packing, you look at the optimism side.
Yeah, glass half full.
Yeah, but Malika, along those lines, let's just talk about the practical implications. We hear so many people saying, how are the players going to keep themselves entertained? How are they going to, you know, coaches are telling us we're worried about the players mentally. Are they going to stay sharp? What things have you thought about for yourself personally? Because you're going to go through much of the same experiences that the players are.
I mean, save for the actual playing basketball part. Look, I'll walk you through what's happened so far since I've gotten here. So I landed in Orlando, and I was wearing a mask and gloves, and I was safely transported from the Orlando airport to this location. And I checked in. I came up to my room. I wiped every light switch, every outlet, every surface down with Clorox wipes and a bleach solution. Then I took my mask off and I washed my hands. I don't leave this hotel room except to go and get grab-and-go food and to go and get tested. So I leave it about twice a day right now. I always wear a mask and I always wear gloves and keep social distance when I do leave. And the way the testing works is you get in a bus, it's one of the big charter buses, and actually the people who are driving these buses right now are going to be assigned to drive the players' buses when they arrive. So they're already being tested every day, even on their off day. They're asked to come in on their own time, which they'll then be compensated for to come and get tested. And what the test is down here, I don't know if you gentlemen have had it where you are, but what the test is here is it's one swab up one nostril, one swab up the other nostril, and a third swab down your throat. And that happens every single day while you're here. And then in terms of entertainment, we're already 3 days in. My mother's already offering, hey, I was thinking that we could play Scrabble over FaceTime and your sister could be your proxy and make your moves for you. So you can tell her over the phone what to do, and then we can play virtually that way. So entertainment-wise, that's we're already there only 3 days in. So we'll see how much of a slippery slope this gets when we're 3 months in.
Along those lines, Malika, Words with Friends app. That's the Scrabble app that you'll be able to do. As Malika Andrews joined us. Oh,
not
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Our ESPN NBA reporter going through the process now of getting into the bubble.
And just out of curiosity, because you talked about the test, up one nostril, up another nostril, down the doing that every day. For those of us that haven't yet taken a COVID test, I mean, what was that like?
So the first day, it was funny, when we went in yesterday to get our testing done, they only swabbed maybe an inch inside the nose. And I said, oh, yesterday, you know, they really scrubbed your brain. I said, oh, you must have come early. We've changed that process. So it's not painful. I won't say it's comfortable, but it's a really quick and easy process. We walk into this ballroom, and there are a bunch of nurses who are in there. You get a little sticker, you bring the sticker to the next station. The next station is a person, a doctor who has gloves and a shield, one of those the clear face shields, a mask, full scrubs, and they do a very quick swab. The whole process, it takes 30 seconds. And from walking out of the hotel to walking back in my hotel, it's been taking about 10 minutes. So I did get it done before I left. So I have had it done outside of the NBA protocol too. It was equally as easy when I was in New York getting it done through my doctor. So I would highly encourage folks to go get tested because it really is not a painful process.
Malika Andrews joining us, our ESPN NBA reporter, again, going through the process. And tomorrow, it sounds, going to go into the what it will be considered the bubble for the NBA. So along those lines, Malika, people are saying bubble, but they're saying mesh hat because there's going to be workers that are in the bubble and then leave the bubble and come back in the bubble every single day.
Yeah.
What is the protocol for those people as far as testing is concerned?
So I've been paying close attention to that because I've never been diagnosed as a hypochondriac, but I border right on that uncomfortable line. And so from my understanding, from talking to folks around the league, the Disney staff who are coming, quote unquote, in and out, and I've seen a lot of this on Twitter, a lot of this is a mesh hat, this isn't going to work, pointing to that specifically. And the league recognizes they have a lot of hurdles to overcome. But in terms of that specifically, those employees are going to be subject to temperature checks. The league is going to do their best to make sure that the people who are working on, say, this one tower with this one team cleaning these specific rooms, that they are then repeating those same rooms. You're limiting the number of people that have been in and around your personal space, because you're not even allowed to go in. A player isn't even allowed to go into another player's room, right? So they're being as diligent as they can. And the other thing that I asked about was just how concerned they are. And the league has told me that they have consulted with doctors who said, look, the primary way that this virus is transmitted is human-to-human contact through breath, through saliva, through that sort of a thing. And so if you, not through surfaces, although that is one way that it could possibly be transmitted. And so what they're saying is, look, we are subjecting those people to temperature checks, to other sort of symptom checks. They won't be in the room at the same time as the players. And for the people who will even be remotely close to the players, like the bus drivers I mentioned, those people are already getting tested. So the league has done its due diligence in research in terms of how close you need to be to someone. They're listening to the doctors in terms of what they think the protocol should be for those Disney employees going in and out, and that's who they're taking their cues from.
So with this in mind, Malika, we had these clips with Dari and Mel on their radio show on Saturday. They had a bunch of people on, Buster Olney, Brian right. Windhorst, giving their predictions, for lack of a better term. And Buster was asked, what's the percentage chance that baseball starts? He said 5. What's the percentage chance they actually crown a World Series champ? He said 0. Brian Windhorst was much more optimistic. Now, this was, again, as we're learning about more and more COVID cases spiking in the state of Florida, albeit not as much where you guys are in Orlando, but in other surrounding counties. Brian said 100% chance they start, 90% chance they finish. As you are now sort of immersing yourself in what the protocols are going to have to be, if I said to you those same two questions, percentage they start on time and percentage they finish with an NBA champion, what would you give me?
I would say 98% they start and 60% chance they finish.
60.
And that is, I am a pessimist / realist, maybe somewhere in the zone between those two things. And I think the only reason that I would put it down around, I was going to say 50-50, just because I'll refer to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the only thing that controls the timeline is the virus. And so if they are able to, which I do think, there are holes in this plan, but they have been as careful as they possibly can to put in putting this together. It consulted as many experts as they felt that they needed to put this together, a 113-page safety protocol. There are still factors they can't control. And those outside factors are what makes me say, I can't guarantee it 100%. And so let's throw out a number. All right, it's going to be 60. Sure. That's the number I'll assign to that feeling.
All right. No, I honestly, fair. I think that's really fair. And listen, let me just say, for all of us who will be relying on your information inside the company and those who will be watching it outside the company, we do honestly appreciate what you're going through to bring us the inside information covering the game. So know it's appreciated, and we will talk to you again when you are officially inside the bubble.
And I know this, by the time you come out, I will not want to play you in Scrabble, because your word knowledge will be unbelievable by then. Thanks, Malika.
Thanks for having me.
You got it.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, no doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time. My brother Marcus. Marcus Spears, our ESPN football analyst and newest permanent member, by the way, of the NFL Live crew. So, hey, don't sleep on that part of it, Marcus. I'm just saying, wear that one with pride, my friend.
My guys, what's up, fellas? What's going on?
Not a whole lot, man. We're just, hoping there's an NFL season. So talking and preparing like there is an NFL season. And we actually did get some news, obviously, the other day with Cam Newton signing with the New England Patriots. So I don't know. You can tell us what your before Cam signed with New England, where you thought they were going to finish and how good they were going to be. So start with by telling us what you thought there, and now then tell us where you think they're going to be with Cam Newton.
I thought they had a real opportunity to finish before Cam Newton second. I thought Buffalo would be the team to beat in that division with the moves that they made, especially bringing in Stephon Diggs. And we saw Josh Allen start to get better at the end of the year and knowing what that defense was. But I was also a little nervous for New England because of the Dolphins and the moves that they made this offseason, signing Byron Jones and bringing in Kyle Van Noy. So it was going to be very hairy for Bill Belichick trying to prove himself. And obviously that's a stupid statement, but based on everything we've talked about with can he do it without Tom, I thought it would be a tougher proposition, only having Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer to be a signal caller. So the fact that they signed Cam, I probably put them first in that division now.
Marcus Spears with us. And I'm glad that you brought up Miami, because I've thought about them a lot, Marcus, this offseason, and people are probably saying, what the hell's wrong with you? But let me explain. I mean, the whole point of last year was to be terrible from the front office, not from the players or the coaches. The whole plan from the front office and the president and the owner, let's stink so we can get Tua Tagovailoa. And basically, Brian Flores and Chris Greer, the GM, and the players said, screw that. We're going to go out there and we're going to go play hard. And they found a way with Ryan Fitzpatrick, a quarterback, to make a really, really interesting showing for themselves and steal home field advantage away from the New England Patriots in that last game of the regular season. It is clear to me that the players in Miami are buying into what Greer and Flores are selling, and it's working. I find them to be one of the more fascinating teams to watch in the entire NFL this year.
You know what, Wings? Every time we have a season, you look for two or three of those teams that could be kind of sleepers. And week in, week out, they're not winning games in bunches, but you see them win a big game. You see them play well, and they possibly lose in the fourth quarter to a team. But Miami, to me, is one of those. I'm leery to say bubble teams, but a lot of people are going to have their hands full with them, especially if Tua Tagovailoa starts playing early with this team. You look at last year, man, and the one thing about that team, and I came on last year after we had a conversation on Get Up, and Big MG almost killed me for saying they were tanking. And I had some questions about what they were doing from a football standpoint. But as the season progressed, to your point, Trey, they found some type of groove. And like you said, they bought in to Flores, which I think is the most important thing when you start talking about rebuilding a team. Do the guys believe in their head coach and in the direction that they're trying to go? And it seems that they do. And it seems that they started last year. And now you make some of these moves that you made in the offseason, and you could see little things starting to come together when you look at this team and how they're kind of constructing it. They want to be big and physical up front. Shaq Lawson and Devon Godshaw, they signed Raekwon Davis, who I think could be a really good football player out of Alabama, and Christian Wilkins is there. So those guys are getting older. And then you bring in that experience with Kyle Van Noy and arguably two of the better corners in the league. When you talk about Xavier Howard and Byron Jones, so
two highest paid for sure,
huh?
Two highest paid for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I love to be one of those guys when it comes to that. but you look at it and you look at the way they're building it, and it's very similar to that team that Flores comes from and that has been dominating that division.
Marcus Spears joining us, our college and NFL football analyst. So I'm going to ask you another before and after question like I did about Cam. A couple of weeks ago, as we were talking football, knowing it was going to start at the end of July, your thought on how it would open and how maybe smoothly it could open at that point. And now where we are now after, you know, a bunch of positive tests and spikes around the country, Do you have still have that same feeling, or has that been dampened a bit?
It's been dampened a bit. I'm a bit more nervous about it. And look, this is the thing. We always knew that players, teams, support staff, front offices, coaches, we knew coronavirus would show its face in the NFL during the season with players. And I think it's one of those things, man, where we all are flying by the seat of our pants. We want to have these structures in place. We want to say confidently that, you know, it will be an NFL season or a college football season. But it seems like the news is just not getting better at all. I remember earlier when COVID-19 started, the warmer months were supposed to suppress it. And now we're seeing spikes. States are having to close again. So, I'm a bit more tapered in thinking that this season is going to happen on time. I think it's going to happen. I don't know if it'll happen on time, or I don't know if it happens on time and we have to stop during the middle of the season because you just have a massive outbreak with players in the NFL. We're seeing it in the NBA. They going into their bubble soon. And you think about it, Fauci said what the NBA was doing was the best plan, the best protocol. So now we're sitting here a couple months away from NFL football season, and there is no bubble for the NFL. What the hell are you going to do with all of those teams? How are you going to quarantine the entire NFL? So we're going to need some really good news here in the next few weeks or months. And obviously that's leaking in the training camp to help me feel more and more supportive and optimistic about the season happening, man. I just keep hearing not good news, fellas. And I don't know how y'all feel about that, but it seems like every time COVID comes up or coronavirus comes up, it's an outbreak. Nothing successful is going on when it comes to the sports community and players getting this freaking virus, man.
Listen, you're right. As one player texted me yesterday, I think we'll start training camp on time and then we'll get together and all hell will break loose. I mean, that's what's going to happen. So
I was in the league. I was in Dallas one year in my while I was with the Cowboys. We had a staph infection outbreak. And I think three or four guys got it. And it was like swift action. Our head trainer, Jim Maurer and Britt Brown, they did a great job of kind of containing it, man. But I remember all of the protocol that went into making sure other guys didn't get it. And it was like going to a damn lab, man, trying to navigate around the cleaning processes. It put the players that didn't have staff in a different situation. We had to meet in different rooms and kind of contain ourselves within the building so they could get it cleared up. So that would be my example of what it looks like if you're concerned about something breaking out in the locker room, man.
Yeah, we'll see. This is uncharted territory, no question. Marcus, as always, we appreciate your time, my friend. Thanks, man.
All right, brothers. Y'all take care, man.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
Delighted to be joined by Ricky Fowler, who joins us now in the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Ricky, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. How would you assess how the tour has found its way back to playing in light of everything that's going on and the spate of positive tests we saw at Cromwell last week?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. You know, the tour's done a great job. When you look at the amount of tests that have been administered and how many guys we're dealing with, and obviously in a perfect world, you would have zero positive tests, but you know, I think with the number that we've had between the PGA Tour and the Korn Ferry, it's very minimal. Obviously, we knew there was going to be some risk involved coming out, but all the measures put in place, we're creating our own bubble, basically here on site at golf courses, whether it was last week in Connecticut to Hilton Head to Colonial, and now Detroit. So it's definitely nice being back playing competitive golf, but there's very little energy out here without the fans. As we all know, when it comes to sporting events, the fans are a big part of it. So it's a little quiet, but at least we're back playing and competing.
Well, anybody that knows you and watches you on tour, when they see in your golf shirt, they see that tattoo of the Olympic rings. You were part of the U.S. team that played in Brazil in the Summer Games in 2016. And quite frankly, there was a lot going on there at the 2016 Summer Games. There was a lot of unrest, and there was the potential of the Zika virus and all that stuff. So did that in any way, having to be sort of somewhat sequestered for the Olympics, prepare you for what you're dealing with now?
I guess you could look at it that way. I mean, it was definitely a concern for a lot of people, and going forward into the Rio Olympics, you know, worrying about safety and security measures, and you know, with Zika being around. But once we were down there, and you know, there was everything was put in place. Another point where the tour did a great job of making sure we had the people around us, making sure we felt safe. You know, we had security with us wherever we went. And as far as Zika went, I mean, I think it was more hyped up on the media side of things. I think I saw one mosquito the whole time I was down there. And, you know, there's going to be risk, really, any types of places you go. It all just depends on how you go about your business, what time you may be out doing that. And, you know, I think, like I said, like I've mentioned a couple of times, the tour has done a great job, and it's always nice to be back in Detroit for Rocket Mortgage Classic. I have a great partnership with these guys. And, like I said, I think the unfortunate part is just not being able to have the fans involved.
Now, we're talking to Ricky Fowler again in Detroit for the Rocket Mortgage Classic. And I want to get into what their Rocket Mortgage is right. doing in Detroit. It's a very, very important thing. When Nick Watney tested positive, he was the one, and then that following week, more tested positive. Whether being at a tournament, Ricky, or hearing about it as a golfer, did it give you a little more trepidation of, should I take a little time away, or do I need to be a little more aware of this? Did it change your point of view at all when more positive tests came?
It didn't change my point of view or outlook on it. I mean, we've been taking it very seriously throughout the time off. The first month, basically just stayed home the whole time, did a grocery run once a week, and we had our own little bubble that we created with Justin Thomas and his girlfriend and a couple of our other friends. So that was really the only people we saw. And then out here on tour, you know, you're around more people, but you know, being able to social distance, we got plenty of room on a golf course. So staying away from people, at least far enough away. And you can kind of, in a way, create your own little bubble within the bigger bubble here. So I haven't at any time felt unsafe or like we've been in a bad position.
Yeah, trust me, when Mike and I play, social distancing is not a problem.
Not a problem.
He goes left, I go right. We'll see each other on the green and nobody touches the stick. It's pretty easy. As Ricky Fowler is with us. So, Ricky, take us through this season, right? Because you're a guy who's always one of those guys that's around the top of the leaderboard. You have a couple of big major championships under your belt, including the Players' Championship a few years ago. Obviously, we're not going to play the Open Championship this year, but we still have the potential for three majors in a very congested time. What's your schedule going to look like going forward as you try and bag that one thing that you came so close to in 2014, that first major win?
Yeah, well, we started back, like you guys mentioned, 3 weeks ago. Played the first 2 weeks and didn't exactly have the start I wanted. You don't want to have weekends off in the golf world. So we're looking to kind of turn things around here in Detroit. And I'm going to play the next 2 weeks, which will be down in just outside Columbus, playing at Mirfield, Jack's place. So next week is kind of a new event. The John Deere wasn't going to be able to move forward. So I think Workday picked up that week. So having that and then Jack's event. So 2 weeks at Mirfield would be pretty cool. After that, we've got WGC, which is in Memphis for FedEx, and then we've got a major. I'm hoping everything is going to move smoothly because that one's out in San Francisco, which we all know has been a little bit of a hot spot. I know the tour's talked about having some fans at the second week of Columbus, which will be, you know, 2 weeks from now. And I think everything's pretty much on a day-to-day, kind of week-to-week basis out here. But like I said, I'm ready to turn my season around with not getting off to the start that I wanted.
Yeah, listen, it's we know it's been different for everybody inside our world of sports and certainly outside the world of sports as well. As we're talking to Ricky Fowler, who works in conjunction with Rocket Mortgage. It's a Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. And I can't wait till you can start shooting some of those commercials again because I do dig those commercials. But they're also Rocket Mortgage is doing something called the Initiative Changing the Course in Detroit. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? They're getting very involved out there.
Yeah, you know, Rocket Mortgage, you know, along with Quicken Loans, and then at the top you go to Dan Gilbert, someone who's been very instrumental in trying to turn Detroit around and bring Detroit back to what it once was. You know, being able to see downtown down here down by the Shinola Hotel, what they've done to rebuild the city in a way. I know this is just kind of still towards the beginning phases of it, but what they've been able to do here is very impressive. So Rocket Mortgage being able to give back to the local community and the surrounding areas, this golf tournament obviously being a big part of that. They've got different initiatives around the tournament. They've got the 3-1-3 challenge, which is, in short, if someone makes a eagle on 15, a hole-in-one on, eagle on 14, hole-in-one on 15, and a birdie on 16. If they were to do that at any point during the week in any of their rounds, you could put them together, and they would be $313,000 that would be donated in their name. So a lot of stuff going on. They're trying to raise a lot of money and put it all into the city of Detroit.
That's tremendous.
That would be eagle hole in one birdie is
not too shabby.
Okay, that'd be something.
Yeah, you have. I mean, it is over the course of four rounds, so you could make an eagle one day, you could make a birdie another. Honestly, I mean, obviously, we all know that hole in one is going to be the hardest part. So we'll see if that can happen.
Trey, you've been playing golf for about 40 years, and you haven't.
Mike,
got
I don't
want to
talk about
years.
It. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. But thank you for bringing that up. Ricky, we appreciate your time this morning. Hopefully continued success for you and continued success as the tour continues to navigate its way, traveling across the country in the middle of the pandemic. And this week they're in Detroit. Thanks, Ricky.
Thanks, Ricky.
Thanks, guys.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
He is Jerry Hairston Jr., who joins us now, 16-year MLB vet. Jerry, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time and perspective. First of all, as we're beginning the spring training thing here again, part two for Major League Baseball, a lot of our sort of baseball insiders have been giving their prognostications for the season, and it was our own Buster Olney who said he gave baseball a 5% chance to even start the regular season and a 0% chance to finish it. I'm assuming you're a little more optimistic than that?
Yeah, I'm a lot more optimistic than that. You know, hopefully we are able to finish the season, but, you know, I think the things that have happened recently with the Philadelphia Phillies, I'm shutting down their spring training facilities. I think these teams are starting to understand and realize, you know what, we really need to take this thing seriously as far as protecting not only our players that are coming in, but our staff. A lot of these staff members are around the ages of 45, 55, 60 years of age. We got to make sure that everything's in place for their safety. So I think a lot of teams have taken heed to that and are going to be a lot better prepared to start spring training 2.0 and try to keep these players and coaching staff safe. So I'm giving it a 75% chance that we not only start, but we'll finish it.
Oh, I love those odds.
Boy, I'd love to get you and Buster in a debate. Yeah, that would be great.
And by the way, speaking of the coaches and such, there are two coaches from the Twins who will not be part of the team as they go forward for safety reasons, where their age bracket falls and
sure,
along the lines.
Understandably so.
Yeah. So as far as baseball is concerned, the play on the field, Jerry, I'm wondering, because it's a shortened season and really each team is it's playing nine other teams only this year, so you see a lot of the same people over and over again, what will be more of an advantage, pitching or hitting?
Well, that's a good question. You know what? You need everything to win, but pitching, I think, is always paramount because you got to figure the hitters would be a little rusty, you know, out of the gates. And if you have dominant pitching, not just starting pitching, but if you have dominant bullpen pitching to keep the game 2-1, 3-2, or throw out some shutouts every once in a while, I think dominant pitching has a really good opportunity to kind of rear its head. And I think if you look at teams that have pretty good starters, dominant starters, let's say like the Washington Nationals, the Yankees adding Cole, and the Dodgers, you know, adding a healthy David Price to go along with Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw, those are the teams I think should get out of the gate fast. But if you look at also teams that are young, that have good young pitching, let's say like the San Diego Padres, that could say, hey, you know what? Why not us? It's only 60 games. It's not a marathon. We can get out of the gate pretty quick and start the season 10-2. We might have a shot. So arms are very important.
Jerry Harrison with us, 16-year Major League vet, World Series champ with the Yankees, and, of course, been covering the Dodgers for the last few years. Let's talk about the Dodgers. You mentioned David Price. They go all in on the trade for Mookie Betts, and it looked like for a while his Dodger tenure would be not to play a game had they not come through with a regular season and find a way to get it done. How much pressure is on this team coming so close the last few years and really having everything at the helm they need to finally get over the hump this year?
I think there is a lot of pressure, but I think nobody feels it more than the players. And what I mean by that is they understand that you only have a certain amount of time, a certain window to win a championship. So the clock is ticking for guys like Clayton Kershaw, Justin Turner, Kenley Jansen. But this is a good type of pressure. You want this type of pressure because you know you have the team to get it done. And you add guys like Mookie Betts, a former AL MVP who's in his prime. You add a guy like David Price, who's a World Series champion and has a chip on his shoulder. You know, last year he wasn't healthy. You know, now he's completely healthy and ready to go. So these guys expect to win. They expect to be in positions that they were in the past, but this time close out the deal. And you rather much be a team that is expected to win than a team that's not expected to win. You might be finding another job in a year or two. So you want that pressure.
And then, Jerry, again, you've been in this league a long time, 16 years, and we're seeing players like Ian Desmond and others, Ryan Zimmerman, have chosen not to play this year. Ian Desmond, he put out a statement. He started to list a whole lot of things he think is wrong with the game of baseball. And I'm sure you have read that. And I'm wondering, when you left the game, I believe in 2013, where did you think baseball was along those lines and where they are now?
Well, I'll address, I played with both Zim and Ian Desmond. We're teammates together in Washington, and I got a chance to hit up Ian yesterday and told him how proud I am of him. You know, he's a very intelligent man. And just looking at the game of baseball, and just looking at society in general, you know, as a father, as a black father, knowing that, you know what, I want to make sure I am there for my kids with just so much social unrest that's going on. And I'm sure his kids are watching TV, watching CNN, watching what's going on. He wanted to make sure he's there for his family to be able to explain what's going on. And, you know, for him to address the systematic racism that's been happening in our country, it is happening in baseball. Make no mistake about it. And when I left the game in 2013, I was very fortunate to have an opportunity with the Dodgers to do TV. I still do that. And the Dodgers are still at the forefront, leading the way and making sure people of color, women, are having an opportunity in this game of baseball. But a lot of other teams aren't doing that. And I think that's what Ian Desmond has been addressing. Guys, there are so many former players that are qualified that are getting overlooked year in and year out in front office jobs, coaching jobs, managerial jobs. You know, look at a guy like a Doug Glanville, one of the smartest people I know, okay? Doug Glanville's never got an opportunity to be a GM. You know, Doug Glanville really didn't have an opportunity to be a manager. I'm shocked that he's never had that opportunity. Eduardo Perez has never managed in the big league. These guys are so intelligent. Eduardo is bilingual. You know, he is perfect guy for a job to be a manager or being in the front office, and yet he's yet had that opportunity. So, you know, just seeing the game the way it has been going, I think that's what Ian Desmond was talking about. And things need to change. And you know, it's one thing to talk about it, but you have to be able to take action. I'm hoping Major League Baseball realized that. The 29, 28 of the teams start to realize that, and hopefully they start making some change within their organization.
Hey, I agree with you 100%, but quit stealing all our analysts, man. We like Eduardo, and we like Doug for their intelligent forethought and foresight on baseball.
But they can help so many teams, man. And the list can go on and on. Marvin Freeman, Ken Hill, Delino DeSales Sr., Derek Lee, Josh Barfield is he's in the organization with the D-backs. I think he's running their minor leagues right now. He has got a chance to be a GM very, very soon. Curtis Granderson, look, Troy Hawkins, guys, I can name so many qualified guys that could be helping organizations. You know, and I think that's what Ian was trying to address.
Right, sure, absolutely.
Many guys are sitting at home.
Yeah. Jerry, as always, we appreciate your time and your insights. Thanks, and hopefully your odds are better and more accurate than Buster's, because I think we all want to see baseball when it's all said and done.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks,
appreciate
Jerry.
It.
Anytime, guys. We need baseball.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.